The name is Ajay Locascio, a.k.a. Gambit. Remember it. And you're listening to the special episode of Power of X-Men. Hope you survive the experience, mon ami.
Boom! Good morning, familia. Dayspring here with a supersized episode of Power of X-Men. It is a big day. We got episode 7 of the X-Men 97 anime series on Disney Plus entitled Bright Eyes, as well as a lot of X-Men comics that came out today, and we're going to be reviewing X-Men Forever Issue 2. So just X-Men Forever Issue 2, because it came out today, and it has, it's a pretty big day for Art God Queen in the comics. Now, it does go without saying this is an episode that's going to be spoiler heavy for the comics and X-Men 97. So we're going to kick off with X-Men 97 first, and then we're going to get into the comics. But if you don't want any spoilers of any kind, tap out now and come back to us later after you've watched the episode or you've read the comics. And when discussing the comics, it's going to be the second half of this episode, and we will be joined by my Masters of Comic Books co-host, our Player One, Cole L. He's going to be tapping in for that. But I wanted to throw in my X-Men 97 review here, and I got to tell you, this episode is also so great. And Bo the Mayo, we will forever trust. Bo just gets, he just gets the X-Men. And we found out who Theo James is playing. So again, familia, if you don't want any spoilers whatsoever, now's the time for you to tap out at 3, 2, 1. All right, so Theo James is playing Bastion. Told you, familia, it was so obvious Bastion was coming. And it took a while to get there. I was like, are they getting there with Bastion? And yes! And by the way, OZT, the project we're seeing everywhere around this episode, the acronym, Operation Zero Tolerance. Tolerance is everywhere. It was right there in the beginning when Gyrick was like, tolerance is extinction for humans. For humans. You know, I see a lot of people being there like, oh, mutants have no tolerance anymore. And they're going to assault, you know, they're going to defend themselves. And it's like, no, it's the humans who are saying they have no tolerance anymore. And that's where we get Operation Zero Tolerance. I cannot believe we are getting Operation Zero Tolerance in X-Men 97. That's insane. Before Onslaught. Before Generation X. Oh! Now, I know a larger criticism with the series has been pacing, but I got to tell you, pacing for these last two episodes has been flawless, in my opinion. I think the only time I really noticed there being a pacing issue was for Life, Death, One, and for, what was it, Fire Made Flesh, the Inferno episode. Those are the only two episodes that I was like, whoa, a lot really happened here, and it just like flew by, and I didn't have a chance to process it. But I think what's so masterful about those two episodes in particular is that you can go back after you've watched it, and you can savor it a little bit more. The rewatchability for this series is next level. I mean, it is truly a next level when it comes to rewatchability. All right, so let's dive into this episode, X-Men 97, Episode 7, entitled Bright Eyes. And it opens up with Remy's funeral. Oh my God, he looks fabulous in his memorial photo. Now, I believe this is a coffin we may have seen in the trailer. I mean, it was a bright, sunny day, so you know, I'm assuming that they just updated the animation, or maybe someone else is still going to die in the series. Maybe we'll have a second funeral. But in the trailer, we did see a coffin going into the ground. And whether that's going to be another one, this one is Remy. Poor Remy. They're burying his body. He's dead. There's no ifs, ands, buts, or about it. Remy is dead. They have identified his body. He has been put into a funeral home. Maybe he was embossed. I don't know. But now he is being put in the ground. It's very real. I got to tell you, super real. And it's a dark, gloomy day. I don't know if they're in Westchester or in New Orleans. So, but we do have Kirk there, who now is officially part of the team. Welcome, welcome, Kirk, to being an X-Man. And he's overseeing the funeral for his, I guess they're not married in this, but in the comics, it would be his brother-in-law. And in attendance is Belladonna, Jean-Luc, who is Gambit's surrogate father, and the Guild Thieves. Is that his brother? I think his brother died in the comics, if I'm not mistaken. The one with the blondish hair and the beard and the red jacket. Belladonna, of course, is the blonde hair woman with the choker. And Jean-Luc is the gentleman with the long brown hair like Gambit's and a headband. And they are a part of Guild of Thieves. And is that Aurora there of the North Star and Aurora? I don't know. I mean, this is one of the curses of watching this like half asleep, which, by the way, this morning I kind of slept through my alarm clock. I had it set for 3 and I was like, eh, just 5 more minutes. And I woke up at like 5:30. So. Yeah, so is that Aurora? Did Remy and Aurora at one point have a secret rendezvous and she showed up there? Aurora is the only person I can think this is. Famili, you tell me if I'm wrong, if it could be someone else, slide into my DMs. But you know, the X-Men are grieving Gambit, and it is a very sad, sad scene, and it's so beautifully done. I mean, the art and the animation for the series is just absolutely gorgeous. And so, you know, Jubilee is at the funeral and she's crying and she's really upset. And she's here, like, how could she, aka Rogue, not be here? And it's because Rogue is on a rampage. And you know, I know Jubilee's only 18, so I think the idea of grief hasn't really touched her. I mean, I guess Jean did die during the series, and we saw her upset about Jean's funeral. But I think it's really logical that Rogue would be so angry that she is not at Gambit's funeral. I mean, this is her way of grieving. In fact, she's going to a U.S. facility, and she's in search of Gyrick. And she's really, really upset. And so the U.S. facility that she goes to is one helmed by General Ross. And she's infiltrating it. And General Ross is like, oh, this place can hold the Hulk. And Rogue unleashes some Marvel versus Capcom moves, specifically her downward kick on the facility. And she's giving zero shits, Familia. She is really going at it. She is furious over Remy's death. So then we cut over to Cyclops, who's having a conversation with President Kelly. And Cyclops is pretty angry because President Kelly seems to be more concerned with polls than death polls. And Cyclops is just so incredibly frustrated. And Jean comes to him and they decide they're going to go to Genosha, where there are some survivors still being pulled out of the rubble, even though it's been a week. They decide they're going to Genosha. Now, we have a couple cameos here. We have Blob and Angel, not a new X-Men Angel, not Archangel, and Multiple Man. So we know they survived, which is nice to see. I'm trying to see if I can see any other cameos there. Amelia and Trish are there as well. Trish just reporting on everything. Amelia helping everyone on the ground. She appeared in the previous series. And it's really wonderful to see all of these mutants kind of coming together and supporting each other. And, you know, in some of the flashbacks, we see Mimic. Mimic is there as well. You know, he kind of appeared in the original series here and there. I believe he definitely was in Age of Apocalypse in the One Man's Worth episode. But I think one of the best parts of this episode is when Rogue tracks down Captain America and she grabs Captain America's shield. Oh, it was so good. And she discovers some kind of project called OZT, which is Operation Zero Tolerance. And Captain America is like, listen, publicly, we have to do this by the book. You know, I just need you to simmer down. My hands are tied. And Rogue is like, since your hands are tied, you're not going to need this. And she threw Captain America's shield. So look at that. We've had two, you know, nods to the Avengers. Well, one isn't really a nod because it's Captain America and he's there. And then the Hulk, you know, talking about the Hulk. Oh, look at that. Where could Wanda be? Where is Scarlet Witch? I am shocked that we haven't seen Scarlet Witch given her popularity. I think Wanda's popularity has sort of simmered down, you know, in the last, you know, year. But man, Wanda Fever, when this was being produced, I'm just surprised they didn't put her in here. I'm surprised Wanda wasn't with Captain America or anyone else. But anyways, Rogue throws. I can't believe it. She throws Captain America's shield. Who does that? Rogue. Like, he's going to need that. I'm sure he has plenty of them, you know, in a locker. But still, that was definitely, Rogue does not give any shit. She has zero tolerance for him right now. Back on Genosha, we see Strong Guy and Forearm. So they survive. And Jubilee and Sunspot are having a conversation about, you know, Sunspot not coming out as a mutant to his parents. This is a plot that plays through the episode where they go to Brazil and they meet his mom. And mom is like, we already knew, but we needed you to come out and tell us, which I thought was very lovely. But the beauty of that is, even though she's accepting, is she really accepting? Because now she's here like, well, we have to figure out what we're going to tell the press and everything and how you need to behave publicly. And it's such a layered situation that only someone who has been in an experience where they have to tell their parents something about their identity can understand. Because yes, on one hand, your parents are accepting, but then on the other, they're playing by society's rules and they don't want you to be too much of a mutant. Or in my case, it was, don't be too gay when we go out. Like, I'm accepting of you, but this is a way we have to act out there. I mean, it's very multi-layered, and you can understand why Roberto was initially apprehensive to come out to her. And even though she's here like, I accept you, it was an entirely different situation that he hadn't even considered. She accepts him, but she doesn't want the world to perceive him as too much of a mutant. Brilliantly layered. I mean, this is the thing I love about this series in general. And again, it's a testament to both of Miles' writing. And of course, we get Beast and Trish talking. And it's very heavily implied that there are some romantic feelings there. And it's... I mean... Listen, I'm always going to be a stan for the 90s. So to see Trish and Beast together, oh, so beautiful. Give it to me. Send them into Shi'ar space for that arc that we got with the X-Men battling the Phalanx with the Shi'ar. And oh, I just loved it so much. But, you know, they're talking about tolerance. I mean, this episode is all about tolerance. And Trish is saying that normal people won't accept mutants if they feel threatened because smashing things is not communication. I mean, that is some real world allegory right there on protests and everything we've seen. And Beast gets like really upset about that. And he's here like, you don't understand, Trish. And meanwhile, we see Parrot, you know, with a photo of Leech and Callisto. I mean, she's very much mourning that. We know Callisto's dead. Is Leech dead? Question mark. He may not be, because as we find out at the end of this episode, Magneto's alive. So could Leech somewhat be alive? I don't know. But then Jean senses someone in the rubble. And of course, we know who is in the rubble. Who emerges? She's like, it's a telepath. And Cyclops is like, Madeline. And it's like, nope, it ain't Madeline. It is another one of your love interests, Cyclops. None other than Emma Grace Frost. Now, this is where I will nitpick. Because in New X-Men, when Emma emerges from the rubble, it's sort of an iconic moment, right? She's in pure hysteria. She's holding Negasonic Teenage Warhead. And she's like, she chose it herself, the code name. And she will be a credit to her family and species. Get her to a hospital. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, who just emerged from the rubble? Is she a sentinel? And Emma's like, take her to a hospital. And the paramedics are like, the kid is dead. And Emma's like, then bring her back to life, you imbeciles. And Jean looks at Emma. She goes, oh my God, Emma, Emma Frost, you're one of us. You're one of our X-Men. And Emma's like, what happened to everything? It is such an iconic moment. It's not that they blow over Emma coming out of the rubble here, because it is kind of beautiful the way she, Jean lifts her out of the rubble and Emma sort of like lifts her hand and everyone is so happy. Like Jubilee grabs Sunspot because they're just happy that there is a survivor, right? Even if it's Emma Frost. But Emma here is just like, you know, she's in her diamond form and Beast is like, oh, it must have been a latent mutant, you know, ability that was triggered by, you know, the Genosian genocide. And Emma's like, cough, cough, I've always done well under pressure. And then she's sort of taken away. I don't know. It felt a little too not iconic enough, in my opinion. But you know what? Emma's okay. And I'm happy that Emma's okay. And meanwhile, Rogue has found Gyrick at a very swanky place. And Gyrick is like, you can have Summers' wife try to infiltrate my mind. I'm ready for her this time. And Rogue's like, sugar, that ain't this kind of infiltrating or probing. And she siphons his memories. Oh, Rogue is giving zero shits. She has zero tolerance. So afterwards, you know, she meets up with the X-Men. Rogue meets up with the X-Men. And her family is there for her. They understand she's in a lot of pain because of Remy. And then meanwhile, Gyrick is, you know, being treated because Rogue siphoned his powers. And we know that takes out, like, that puts people in a coma. You know, it seems like Rogue has some kind of control over it. But, you know, Gyrick is still conscious when someone comes in, none other than Bastion, and is like, you're not going to do anymore, and smothers him. Bastion smothers Gyrick in his bed. And so the X-Men go to Madripoor, and they meet up with Bolivar Trask, because Bolivar Trask had sent them a distress call earlier, and he was talking about Sinister and how Sinister is one of the best geneticists on the planets. And, you know, he, you know, a reference to another he, which is Bastion, is the next generation of Sentinels. And when Rogue siphoned Gyrick, we got a flash of Nimrod, because one of the things that Beast is asking is, how is Sinister able to engineer this new breed of Sentinels when this is technology or, you know, information from the future? Well, now we can assume that it was Nimrod, because Rogue, when she touched Henry Gyrick, there was Nimrod. And so Bolivar Trask is really distressed. He hates what happened in Genosha, so he has some humanity left in him, and he's about to jump off a ledge, but Rogue catches him. And Rogue and him have a moment. She's like, you killed my man, and drops him to his death. And the X-Men are shocked by this. But turns out that just awakened the Sentinel Prime within Bolivar Trask. And he just like KOs Rogue there. And I was like, what? And then this Prime Sentinel fights the remaining X-Men and takes them all down. I mean, Jean puts up a really good fight, but isn't strong enough to go up against him. Did Morph just die in this episode? I don't think he died. But one of the things that I don't understand about Morph here, okay, so he turns into Quicksilver, another Avengers reference. I mean, technically, he's an X-Factor outfit here, and in universe, he's from X-Factor. But one of the things that I do not understand about Morph, it's like, okay, so he gains their physical attributes. So like in the Blob's case, he would be a little bouncier because, you know, that's how he shapeshifts. But I wouldn't necessarily classify the running and speed as a physical power with Quicksilver, right? I mean, I guess maybe the mutation makes the legs go fast, and that's where it's physical. I guess this is more of a question for me on Quicksilver's powers. How do they work? I know it's not a speed force like the Flash, right? Like, this Flash has access to a speed force. So I guess there's something. I always thought, like, Quicksilver was imbued with like an electricity, you know, that comes that emanates off of him. So essentially like a mutant gene speed force that's unleashed when he uses his power, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But I didn't know it was a physical, like my legs go fast. I don't know. Listen, this is an interesting conversation to have, but Prime Sentinel blows off Quicksilver slash Morph's head, takes down all of the X-Men. It's just, it was so sad. And then he's neutralized. Oh, Morph's okay. He's okay. I'm just looking at this right now. And then he's neutralized. Prime Sentinel's neutralized by Cable, who's from the future and knows how to disable them. And then Jean is able to read Cable's thoughts really quickly and finds out that he had that moment with Madeline, and that's Nathan. And Cyclops is like, oh my God, you're Nathan. And Cable's like, get out of my brain. You're not my mom to Jean. And it's, you know, this is all very lovely. I love the Summers family dynamic. And well, he doesn't say you're not my mom. He just says you're not her. We get a cut to Bastion, who is giving Magneto a shave. I was worried for Magneto's hair. I was like, are you going to cut off Daddy Magneto's long, luscious white hair? But it appears that he's only giving him a shave. And there, and that's where we end the episode. So Magneto's alive. Theo James is voicing Bastion. A lot. Emma's okay. We did get a flashback to seeing Dazzler thrown up against the wall and rubble falling on Emma and Shaw. It's a lot. This episode, a lot happened, but so perfectly paced. Anyways, Familia, it was another great episode. I'm sure we'll think about it more and we'll have more feels and we'll post them on Instagram. But you let us know your feels on this episode. We are now going to transition over to Cole Al, and we're going to be talking all about the X-Men reboot from the ashes, as well as X-Men Forever issue 2. Boom! What's up, Familia? Dayspring here with my favorite Player One co-host for Masters of Comic Books. Cool, Al, what's going on?
It's going good. That's all I got to say.
I was like, it's going good, dot, dot, dot.
Leave you in suspense. No, it's going great, dude. Of course it's going great. I get to talk with you today and comics, lots of stuff. I don't know. It's gloomy here, so like my mood is like totally like not upbeat.
Well, I woke up this morning and I was telling you I'm getting the apartment down here ready for us to be at our pad in New York. And I was like, why am I so excited for today? And I'm like, oh, because I get to talk to Cole today.
Well,
like,
yeah,
that's why. And I had a dream last night that I slept through our recording. And I was like, oh, man, like, that's just...
Oh, that would never happen. And no. I wouldn't mind. I mean, sleep's important, so I wouldn't have, like, gone after you or anything. I'm pretty easygoing.
No, but it meant a lot to me because I miss your face so much. I enjoy our talks. And it's so funny because, man, people are like, oh, Jed McKay is coming to, you know, the X-Men line. Have you ever heard of him? I'm like, have I heard of Jed McKay? We interviewed him on Masters of Comic Books, and we got the scoop on how much he enjoyed writing Dazzler.
Yeah, that's so crazy because we interviewed him pretty early-ish in his career. Like, Black Cat just finished. He was just in the middle of his Moon Knight stuff, and Death of Doctor Strange would have just finished, so he would have been picking up Clea as Strange very soon. It's interesting, like, very, because now he's like doing so much stuff. He's like, he's with Avengers right now. He's going to be doing the X-Men title coming up in July-ish or something. So it's very, and like, same thing how we did, we interviewed Philip Kennedy Johnson, who was like really early in his Superman stuff, and now he's doing Hulk and he's doing like a bunch of other things. So it's just, it's really cool.
Well, honestly, a lot of those interviews were because you really wanted to get there and have those conversations with them because you eyeballed the talent quickly. And I was kind of like, yeah, especially like Philip Kennedy Johnson, I had no idea who he was because he was writing an Aliens book, if I remember correctly. And I
was
not
doing that in Superman.
Yeah, and I was not an Aliens fan by any means, but I was an Aliens fan at the end of those issues I read. And I just thought he was so talented. And Jed McKay, for me, reminds me a lot of Tom Taylor, this kind of level of writing. And I believe I said this to him, where I feel I get a bang for my buck in just one issue. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of plot. There's a lot of good character moments. Like, I don't walk away feeling there was a missed opportunity.
Yeah. McKay does a great job too with he ties in like continuity from everywhere else. And I'm not the biggest continuity buff out there, but it's really fun because he takes like characters from like years ago, like years and years ago that haven't been used probably since like the 70s, and like incorporates it into his modern storytelling. And it's really fun. He's really good with the character moments and building. Like, if you read his Moon Knight run, spoiler alert, Moon Knight is dead at the moment, and like the relaunch title, Vengeance of Moon Knight, he's used the supporting cast as the main drive of that series so far, and I feel like people only let McKay could do. McKay is the only one that can do that right now. Granted, he's had the 30 issues to build up those characters, but I'm excited to see what he brings into the X-Men.
Oh, I'm so excited, and we're going to dive into that. We're going to dive into that and what we feel he can bring. But before we get into the X-Men relaunch that's happening in a few months from the ashes, I have mixed feelings on it, but that's why I need you to be my anchor. I want to know how you feel about X-Men 97. I want your feels on the series.
I'm really loving it. Like, mm-hmm. I never watched the 90s animated series. I was more of a Spider-Man guy, so I watched that religiously growing up. And granted, yeah, I wasn't alive when the series was going, so I never...
So wild to me.
Yeah. But I actually never watched the X-Men animated series, so like I'm just picking it up when it got relaunched on Disney Plus, and I'm loving it. The stories are fun. I'm able to like tell like where all these like story beats are coming from the comics, which is really fun. The animation's fantastic. The music's fantastic. I'm having a great time with them.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it quite a bit. Obviously you probably see the posts I put up.
Absolutely. I never miss a beat.
I've been obsessed with it because I really do think like Bo DiMaio got it. I think he understood mm-hmm. what made these characters special. I think he understood that you want to make Cyclops the leader, Boy Scout. You want to make Storm the goddess. You want to lean into the sci-fi elements with Jean and Maddie and Sinister. You want to get into that soap opera-ness with Magneto, Rogue, and Storm. He truly just, and while still being superheroes, with this deep mutant metaphor that's relevant to today's world. It's hard to do. It's really hard to do. In fairness to a lot of the criticisms I've had over the years for X-Books and other X-Men incarnations, that is not easy to do.
Oh, no, not at all. Sure. But I think you hit it perfectly that it still maintains like that soap opera-ness that makes X-Men engaging and fun and like drama-filled, that gets characters invested with these, or it gets readers invested with these characters. And so it is... That's what's so fun. Like the Madeline Pryor episode with episode 3, like I was just hooked like the entire time because it was really fast, I will admit, because they had to cram in so much into those 30 minutes. But I think that's what I enjoyed so much about it. And then the Genosha episode, which is already iconic, I think was probably the most perfect episode that they will I don't think it'll get any better than that, because I think there was a good balance. Like, it was paced perfectly, it hit you right in the gut, and it had like a good the pacing was great, and it spotlighted the relationships really cool for each of the relationships that was going on at that time. It was just really fun. I love it.
Yeah, we talked to Bo on the back end, and he was telling us that, you know, the first like 4 episodes is all about respecting what came before, being mm-hmm. nostalgic. And then the rest of the series is looking ahead and dismantling that nostalgia. And
which
we got that. Yeah, which you had to do. I mean, there was only so many more callbacks I wanted to be posting about.
Well, exactly, because you can't. That's what kind of like I feel like the MCU and just kind of media as a whole, but kind of I've seen this a lot with Marvel Comics where they've relied too much on the nostalgia sort of aspects of things, thinking that's the only way you can get to sell your material and your products and stuff. But the idea of looking forward is promising, which I wish more people would do or more companies would do, I guess.
Well, wait. So one of the things I do want to point out, and I don't think I pointed this out in my initial review for episode 5, was that in the comics we never truly saw the Genosha genocide from the perspective of those in Genosha. It was just in Grant Morrison's New X-Men. We've gotten flashbacks to it, you know, in the past, especially with Polaris during Chuck Austin's X-Men, but we never got an entire issue dedicated to seeing these mutants running for their lives, trying to save themselves. And that's what I think was a big emotional sucker punch for us here. And it was done so well. The X-Men looked like what they are, heroes, you know. But I wanted to ask, how did you feel when Gambit died?
Oh, that was a gut punch, like incredibly. Like I wasn't expecting that too. Like for it to be so early in the season two and to kill off Gambit like that too, it was mind-blowing, very shocking, but delivered very well and very well earned. And I, like I said, with having the spotlight on the like the love triangle of Magneto, Rogue, and Gambit, it makes it his death even feel harder to kind of get through, especially with Rogue. And I think the next episode is probably going to be like a more of a spotlight on Rogue, like in the aftermath of everything, which is
Yeah.
episode 7, I think.
It's really interesting. So episode 7 is called Bright Eyes, which was a nickname for Cable in the original series. So I guess we can pick up the thread of, I'll tell you where I cried like a baby was when Cable goes up to Madeline and Madeline recognizes him as her
Yes,
son.
I loved that. Yes.
Oh, and she's here like, she's like, you survived. And he's like, I'm so sorry, mom. And then he time slides away. Oh, and the way Jennifer Hale delivered it, where she's like, sorry for what? I don't think she was saying, like, what do you mean, sorry? I think it was delivered in such a way that it was like, you are my son. You never need to apologize to me. I'm just happy to have seen you. And that's what makes the Genosian genocide so tragic, not only on a grand level, but a personal level. It's almost Shakespearean. Maddie has this new lease on life, and right before she dies, her life is cut short. But she gets to see her son, the one thing she cared about, the one thing that proved that she was real, that she was apart from Jean. Oh, it made me cry so much. I was literally 3:30 in the morning crying. But yeah, I think it's X-Men 97 has done so well. I think we're going to get a focus on Cable, what's going on with Rogue. And the final three episodes are called Tolerance is Extinction. And I think the humans are going to launch their assault on mutantkind.
Makes
Like,
sense.
bigger than Genosha.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, it's so nice to see like Marvel giving the X-Men like the spotlight and stuff. Like their like promotional material that they've done, like all the commercials and all the promotion that they've done for this series is honestly really smart. I think they've done a really good job with it so far.
Okay. Well, on the flip side of being smart, in the comics,
That was rough.
I haven't been enjoying the X-Men comics for some time now.
Yeah,
And
no.
I'm trying not to be negative about it because before X-Men 97, everyone was like, oh, Dayspring, you're such a hater. I listen to your podcast. It does not give me fan. And I think there's this misconception that if you're a fan, you need to blindly love anything that's being put out there. And I feel that I can objectively look at things and be like, okay, not my cup of tea, but also not terrible. You know what I mean? Like, this is, I understand why this is landing. I will tell you, I don't understand anyone who can sort of look at these books and think like Krakoa is going out in the best way possible.
It's not, and you can absolutely tell it's not going out in the best way possible. There, Marvel's trying to wrap this up as quickly as possible, and it's unfortunate because the Krakoa era was like such an iconic launch that now it's kind of going out without, it's just going out on a little whimper. And I think, and what sucks is watching this happen almost hurts. like reading these comics week after week and going like, this hurts me to almost
Yeah.
read that. Like, It sucks, and it just doesn't feel as powerful. I mean, Gillen's doing as best as he can, and his books and are probably the only thing worth it, excluding Resurrection of Magneto, which was probably the, I mean, that was probably the best.
I did
books
like it
out of all the Fall of X stuff. It was so good, and but like any of Duggan's stuff is bad,
yeah.
And Dead X-Men kind of just ended out of nowhere,
And I love
and.
Steve Fox so much. I really do. But I said this about Gillen and Steve Fox, which is I think they're inheriting a game and they're just trying to finish the game, right? Like they didn't start playing this game. Another player tapped out. I don't think these are plot points because I think individually they're really great. Listen, Duggan, I have nothing positive to say. I've kind of met him before at cons. He was kind of like, you know, little like standoffish with me, and I don't know if it's because he knows a podcast or anything, but
I know you
but,
hate me.
I mean, this is before I was public about,
I know,
like,
I'm
like,
kidding.
No, you know, like, I was gonna say, we've been to cons together, but we have not. You're going to your first con, by the way.
I am, I'm going to C2E2 on Friday.
I'm so I would have loved to have gone.
I get to go because for free because I'm a librarian.
That's right. Get your library ticket. You're gonna have so much fun.
Oh yeah, that's the goal. I'm just gonna hang around Artist Alley the whole time.
Oh,
meet so many creators. That's the goal. I have a list of everybody that I want to meet.
I've never been to C2E2. I've heard nothing but great things. I love Chicago. I would have tried to tap. If you were, well, I guess I can because I'm going to Lady J's now on Saturday. But originally, when we spoke, if you had done 2 days, I could have tried to tap in, but. I have a gig, unfortunately, I think Friday or Sunday. I have to look at my schedule. But I just couldn't make it work. That
It's okay. We'll do something over the summer, of course.
Yeah, I want to drive to Ohio so we can like find like a mini con or something in your area. And it'll be fun. But
oh, yeah.
I think, Duggan, I think it's a disgrace to the X-Men. I think when you have someone like Bo who clearly understands what makes these characters special, then you have Duggan who just doesn't get it. And I don't know if it's Duggan being guided by an editorial hand, because obviously we've heard now rumors of Kevin Feige being the one who instructed Zeb Wells to kill Kamala in the comics.
I think the misconception with that, I've looked at some of the articles from it, but I think Feige, I'm not going to defend Kamala's death, but what's unfortunate is how much the movies are telling the comics what to do, which it should be the other way around. But I think Feige said make her a mutant somehow, or do think not kill her outright. I don't know if those were the exact words. Granted, I don't know the exact thing, but I think what to take away from that is how the movies are dictating what the comics should do, which I hate so much.
Oh, I hate that too, because it should be the other way around. And that's something that has always like baffled me, that the comics would not be the guiding force. Like, you should be focusing everything on making sure that your comics are really, really good, so that way you have material in the future.
And that's what Marvel seems to be, or at least just right now. And maybe it's just why I'm really focusing on indies so much. I mean, I have for years and years, but like I've lost a lot of respect almost for Marvel comics and stuff. And DC I lost my train of thought. Just to,
to a degree.
To a degree. That's what I was thinking of. Thank you. Oh, man.
It's okay, boo-boo. I got you.
I know. That's why I love you. I just can't, you know?
No, you know what? Grace Randolph said this one time in reference to Archie Comics. She was here like, I stopped reading Archie Comics because I realized Veronica and Betty and Archie are always going to be in this love triangle. And she was here like, and that was the impetus for me to graduate to other forms of comics. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes with like Marvel Comics, I'm like, oh yeah, they're always going to do something like this. And it's not them, it's me. You know, maybe I've outgrown, you know, those kinds of stories. But I like indies as well. You've gotten me so much into indies over the years. So
I got a long list for you, brother.
I exclusively read indies. I just finished Ducks, which took me a while to get
Ducks
through.
Is good, yeah.
Yeah, and I loved it so much. But, you know, we are getting a reboot this July.
Yeah.
And I'm curious for some of your thoughts. If some of this stuff is going to make you come back to the X-Books in an exciting way. Well, you haven't left, but
No, I've just been
disappointed
torturing myself.
Emotionally, would you come back? But no, like, because we have a lot of people in on the podcast that, you know, I kind of came up with. We left Beeren around zero tolerance for the X-Men, and we came back with new X-Men. We came back with new X-Men. And then from New X-Men, which I want to say was like 2000 forward, we have been Wednesday Warriors. And we've gone into the comic book store or Comixology, or it's Amazon now. And we always buy our weekly comics. And now I know so many of us have just dropped off in the Krakoan age. So, you know, we have Tom Brevoort coming to the books as, you know, the X-Men group editor, previously occupied by Jordan D. White. I always said this. I like Jordan D. White. We had him on the podcast. I thought he was a great guy. I loved Sailor Business. But I think he lacked an understanding of what made the X-Men special. I don't think he understood that.
I think what sucked is, I think after Hickman left, they tried to capture that magic that Hickman did with it, and I think that's one of their biggest mistakes is you can't copy somebody else's work.
No, you can't. And I do think, and this is my own like true misunderstanding of how an editorial comic book office should work. I always thought like head of X, which was what Jonathan Hickman was, which is like a showrunner position.
Basically, yeah.
I always thought that's what the group editor should be. You know, should be he or she should be at the helm of these books and being like, okay, this is A, B, and C, and we can fill some stuff up in between these big plot beats, but this is where the story is going to progress too.
Yeah.
And it sounds like these editors are just at the mercy of what's being pitched to them. And that's so odd to me that they wouldn't have some kind of showrunner style person on the books on all of their IPs just to make sure everything, like you're telling a big cohesive story. Yeah, I just think Krakoa, I think it's such a mistake to leave Krakoa. I thought Krakoa should have been the new status quo for the X-Books.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Tom Brevoort historically has done some really big stories like AVX and House of M.
That doesn't mean they're good.
They're not good. They're not good. I wish House of M was good.
That was
no,
bad.
Look at you being a little bitch, man.
Well, okay. Well, look who were the writers on that, though.
No offense,
but like,
yeah,
Bendis did most of those, and Bendis isn't a bad writer, but he's not an event writer.
Bendis was learning. I think he learned during House of M. House of M was, at times when it was coming out, so boring. Like, getting those issues, like, monthly, and it was delayed. Back in the day, these issues got delayed for months.
Well,
and
yeah.
It was just all talking. Like, and it wasn't good. It wasn't even good talking. I'm sorry, go. I keep cutting you off.
No, I cut you off all the time. No, Bendis talking is not good talking.
I did like his all new X-Men and Uncanny X-Men. I love that era, the Marvel Now. I'm forgetting what it was called, but I did
not
mind it.
Yeah, it was Marvel
it.
Now.
I
no, it's
it.
Not bad. It's it. I mean, Hickman has hits, but Bendis has his hits, and they're okay. I'm not the biggest Bendis fan, but I will give most of his stuff a read. I like more of his grounded stuff, like Daredevil's always iconic, and some other stuff.
Some other stuff, like, I can't remember.
Alias.
Oh, I love Alias so much. I mean, he gave us Jessica Jones. I will forever be indebted. I have the big omnibus, and I don't like omnibuses. I have that big omnibus because I can just read it, and I know I'm getting a quality comic from that. But, you know,
Spider-Man. Sorry.
You're right. Yes, Ultimate Spider-Man. Both the Miles Morales and the Peter Parker were so good.
I'm literally just going through a list in my head.
But you know where he fucked up with Ultimate Spider-Man? He fucked up when he killed Gwen Stacy, when Carnage killed Gwen Stacy. That was like the end for his Ultimate Spider-Man Peter Parker run.
She came back, though, didn't she? Like, as a clone or something?
Yeah, she was like a clone of a clone or something like that. I'm forgetting. But yeah, she does come back. But everyone was so upset with the way they killed her. I remember being at Midtown Comics and everyone up in arms about it. Oh.
I was probably like 7 when that happened,
oh
so
God.
I had no idea what was going on.
I was like 48 when that happened. No, everyone was so upset. So, you know, I mean, Tom Brevoort has been there for a lot of like pivotal moments in X-Men history. I don't think they've always landed. I've said this before. He had a form spring. I thought he trolled X-Men fans tremendously during that period. He seems to have learned a lesson, and I think some of his Substack articles seem very promising. But
they do. I mean, I'm subscribed to his newsletter that he comes out every Sunday because I'm always interested to see, because he's been at Marvel the longest out of everybody so far. I mean, because he was part of the Clone Saga,
and
which is like he was part of the Spidey office during then. I mean, he's worked on like tons of great books. I mean, most of like Hickman's work, Wade's Fantastic Four, a lot of great stuff, to be honest. Some of my favorite books that Brevoort has worked on.
I don't want to disqualify him as an editor, you know, because again, understanding that they're not showrunners, but that they're actual editors, I would say editing, just looking at the books from an editing perspective, I think the books are somewhat tight that he's worked on.
I think he's a really good editor, to be honest, in my opinion, at least. Yeah. I think he's a really good editor, and I think that's why he's been at Marvel for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, because, well, number one, he's done like tons of those like big pivotal events, like you said, like Secret Invasion, AVX, House of M, and all that stuff. Did he do Civil War?
Did he do Civil War? That's a really good question. I know Joe Quesada was talking about it on NPR when it first came out. Let's see. Civil War.
But yeah, he's done all those iconic events. Granted, they might not be written the best, but like they got talks and they changed the status quo for a lot of things.
Yeah, he was an editor for it.
Yeah.
He was an editor for it.
And so but like with this X-Men relaunch, I don't know. We know very little about what's to come. The only reason I'm excited is because of the creative teams.
I have to agree with you. So I'm not excited for the relaunch, but when I started looking at who was on what, I was like, oh, these aren't bad writers. And everyone out there is having a field day being like, oh, they suck, they suck. Oh, Stephanie sucks. And I'm like,
you'll get that a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think Stephanie is a bad writer. I think Stephanie just gets a lot of bad shit. I think you should.
Her Cosmic Ghostwriter is really good, and that's and I want someone who understands Cosmic Marvel if they're going to write a Cosmic Phoenix book.
That's fun. It was a fun like little Western sort of deal. I recommend you read a lot of her historical fictions that she's done. Like,
oh, really?
She released one called The Butcher of Paris, which is really good. We only kill them when they're no wait. We only I can't remember what that's called. But that one's really good. She did like a pirate 8-issue series at Image called A Man Among Ye. Her Harley Quinn actually really wasn't too bad either. I think she's a pretty tight writer, and I'm excited to see what she's going to do with the Phoenix book, because that is a cosmic book, because it's supposed to be like a big like base adventure for the Phoenix, which I think is surprised it's never actually been done with the Phoenix, to be honest with you.
A lot of us wanted that at the end of Here Comes Tomorrow, Grant Morrison's final story during New X-Men. And we thought that was a natural progression. Jean is in the White Hot Room operating on the cosmic scale. And then Marvel just gave us Endsong, which I love Endsong quite a bit. But Endsong does end with Jean going into the cosmos trying to find her pieces. And then Jean is just dead for 13 years. And then, you know, we thought she was Hope. She was in, then she comes back. I'm happy for it. My one note for this series, and we'll kick off, we're getting a Jean Grey book in From the Ashes, Phoenix by Stephanie Phillips and Alessandro Miracolo, if that's how you pronounce it. And it looks great. I'm really, really happy that Jean is getting her own, you know, solo series. She's going to go into the cosmos. Who knows what happens at the end of Powers of 10 or Rise of the Powers of... Wait, what? Rise of the Powers of X,
Rise
Fall of the House of X?
Yeah.
Sorry.
They're very long titles.
They don't roll off the tongue. They don't. I don't understand why they don't.
That's just one hint at to why everything's a mess.
Okay. But anyway, so Jean is going to answer a distress call from Nova and, you know, the Phoenix, her relationship with the Phoenix is going to be examined on a cosmic scale. I'm happy with this. I want a Jean book. I don't like the costume.
You don't like the costume?
I hate the costume.
Why do you? I'm curious. Why do you hate it?
Okay. I think if she's going to be in space, I need her to have a sash. I need her to have a fucking sash.
Because she's like good. Captain Marvel sort of deal.
Yeah. Well, like how she also had as Phoenix in her Green Phoenix outfit.
Okay. And, sorry. I'm not that up to date with Phoenix's costumes. I'm sorry.
I don't like the black accents around the boot thighs area. And I don't like the headpiece. I don't like the headpiece. Why tinker with something that's already perfect? Or, you know, I would have liked them to have revisited maybe the White Phoenix costume, which I am being, yes, I am being biased because that's my favorite Jean Grey costume. But the black and red one that she had in Rosenberg's Phoenix Resurrection.
Oh, yeah, that one
would have been
yeah.
good. You could put mm-hmm. it and make it starry. It just doesn't read cosmic for me. It reads Ultimate X-Men. You know, alternate universe. It does not read cosmic to me. But is she going to have Phoenix wings now attached in this costume? Then maybe I can get behind it. I can understand the utility behind it. That's just my opinion there.
Well, I'm sorry you don't like it, but I think it like the costume. But I think it'll be a good series. I think it's nice to be getting solo books from the X-Men, something that we haven't seen in a very long time, excluding like Wolverine and stuff.
Agreed. Oh, I started like the Wolverine birthday crossover. What's it called?
Oh, Sabretooth War.
The Sabretooth War. I started reading that and I liked it, and then I didn't like it. I was like, I'm not spending $5.99 a week on this book.
The problem is it's 10 parts.
Yeah, it's too big.
10 issues is a very long time. But it did start out actually really good.
Really good, right? Like, I'm not making that up. I really enjoyed it.
But it still has like good in it. But like reading it, you're just like, okay, man, they're just really, really stretching it out right here, aren't they?
Yeah, I really wanted to like Sabretooth War, but like it's just, you know, it's just I fell off of it. I'll read it on Unlimited if I have like a lot. But I think for like the most part, I'm sort of done with it.
Well, I think what kind of sucks is that was just they saw that they were close to issue number 50 and decided to just go to number 50.
Yeah.
But anyways, the other titles have that's part of the relaunch. What do you think of Nyx and YX? What are your thoughts on that one?
I really liked NYX when it came out back in the day. I don't know.
I never read it.
It's not bad. I mean, this was our introduction to Laura X-23 at the time. We didn't know it was X-23 because the internet was very different back then. But she was like, you know, that last page with her on the floor or bed, wherever, and her claws popping out. I guarantee you everyone went crazy for it. And she wasn't, you know, it wasn't a really great story in terms of her own agency. If I remember, I don't know why we had to revisit NYX as a title. I don't know why they keep doing these things like Dark X-Men, NYX, and, you know, Fallen Angels. Like, they have a boner for like revisiting these titles that have nothing to do with the original.
This is weird because like if you read the like the quick synopsis for this, it keeps on saying this is Nyx.
Yeah.
What is Nyx?
This is Nyx. I didn't notice. I really did not.
Like you have Miss Marvel's part of it because she's a mutant now. Anole is part of it. You have Wolverine, Laura, Prodigy, one of the cuckoos, Sophie is part of it. And
they're on the Lower East Side, right? Yeah.
I mean, I think it's because what each of these books are trying to do, I think, is similar to how with Krakoa, each of them are like their own sort of tone, which I guess you probably get that with like a big line launch anyways.
Yeah.
But like how you have with Phoenix is supposed to be like a sci-fi adventure. Nyx looks to be like one of those
grade level
kind of appeal to like the young adult readers and everything, which I mean makes sense. I mean, look at the cast you have. The cast is not necessarily popular. X-Men like Anole and Prodigy aren't super popular. Sophie close maybe because of Emma Frost and everything, but Miss Marvel and Laura are probably the most recognizable ones. So I'm very curious what's going to be the the kind of the big appeal of this book. I like Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, though. They did great stuff with Captain America. Their Outsiders from DC is pretty fun. Their Guardians of the Galaxy was kind of middling, but I think it'll be a fun book. I'm willing to at least give each issue a try.
Oh yeah, I'm going to give every issue a try. One thing, okay, so I love Sophie. Sophie was one of the original cuckoos. She's the first cuckoo to die during the ride at Xavier. So the fact that she's back, I've never really processed it. Why is Miss Marvel back in her normal Miss Marvel costume? Didn't we have an entire EW reveal that she has her new mutant costume? And have they revealed what her mutant powers are?
No, there's currently a miniseries, a continuation of the first new miniseries that started, I think, like a year ago. I don't know. I don't remember what that one's called, what the new one is called. But possibly that's when they will reveal it.
It's been a year. Let us know her mutant power. And listen, I like Kamala. I have no qualms with the character. I've always liked her leading the champions. I love Iman Vellani so much. I do not want her to get lost in X-Men shuffle. But I also think it is very interesting that given how the Marvels performed at the box office, how poorly received Miss Marvel was, and I like both of those quite a bit. So personally, yeah. I like them. But I do find it curious that she's leading a book and that they're investing in there when, you need more than just comic book readers, everyday comic book readers to be picking up these books. You need that YA audience that you just said.
And well, they're already this deep in with Miss Marvel being a mutant. So, retracting it will show that they did make a mistake. But
that's true. That's fair. That is fair. But yeah, I'm going to pick up this book and listen. It's street level New York in the Lower East Side. And you have, at the very least, you have Sophie, Laura, and Kamala. I'm down.
And I love those three people. Yeah. And I love those three characters. And I'm hoping for more of a teenage, young adult tone,
I agree. Okay. The next title is X-Force number one by Jeffrey Thorne and Marcus Tu. And it's X-Force. And we got Deadpool, we got Betsy, we got Surge, we got Ascani, Rachel, Forge leading, Sage, and I'm forgetting who's this guy in the back? Tank? Introducing Tank?
Tank was a character in Eve Ewing's Ironheart one issue. I have no idea why he's here.
Welcome. I hope he survives the experience.
Oh yeah. So this will be his second appearance ever in a comic book. I have nothing to judge with this book. I've never read any of Jeffrey Thorne's material. I know he did Green Lantern at DC. I know that wasn't received well, but I'm not going to judge any of that because I haven't read it. But Marcus Tu, he's been part of the X-Men for a really long time. He did Excalibur with Teeny Howard and stuff. And so I think he's going to deliver a lot of great stuff. I'm having Deadpool and X-Force makes sense because Deadpool is popular. But I love that Forge is a big part of this book too.
Yeah,
being the leader and stuff, and it's fun to see. But it's an interesting cast to be X-Force, with Betsy on it and Rachel and everything. But I like that Sage is still on the team too. I'm not familiar with who Surge is actually, but she's
one of the more new Academy X mutants.
Oh, okay,
2005. I'm okay with Betsy and Deadpool and even Surge being X-Force members. Well, two of them had been X-Force members already. Surge has sort of a temper in her. And X-Force, to me, should be the team that has to do the real bad, dirty work.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Ascani, Rachel kind of makes sense too in that. But Forge, for me, will always read X-Factor. Kind of the company man. I don't know if he's...
Okay.
If he's
I've never read that, so that's... I've only read a little bit of that.
Although he too has a dark side though, because Astonishing X-Men, Mark Waid Astonishing X-Men, where he did ghost boxes. So, he's not, I have an open heart for this one. You see, so I don't like the concept of this reboot, but when we get into the nuts and bolts, I'm actually okay with it. Like, I'm like,
yes,
you know,
yes,
I no
absolutely.
Problem. Let me see where this is going. Like, you can sell me on this if you do it correctly.
Absolutely. And like, and a lot of these titles do seem intriguing and something familiar yet still kind of new, like it, like with Phoenix and Nyx, like those are stuff that hasn't really necessarily been done. And so it feels kind of nice to get something fresh yet familiar. However, it does, I don't know, the nostalgia stuff still kind of worries me a little bit, but I'm not going to judge anything before I read it. I hate all the negative hate that most of these books are getting already before they even come out.
That's fair. And I agree. And listen, I've been part of that symphony, but I did go through some of these titles in a previous episode. And I did think, like, once you sit down and you think about it, you're like, okay, this isn't that bad. Like, this isn't, I don't think this reboot has the excitement that we got with Hickman doing Krakoa, but I also don't think this is like dead on arrival. Does that
not
make sense?
At all. Yeah, not dead on arrival at all. I mean, look at these creative teams. You have Jed McKay writing an X-Men book with Ryan Stegman. I think that's a dream team. I mean, that's a match made in heaven. Gail Simone's coming back to comic book writing with Uncanny, which I think is spectacular. And I think they're going to try a lot of new things, or try new things that haven't been done in years, you know?
Yeah, well,
like, I was just going to say, like, with the solo books and stuff. Like, I don't know if you read Brevoort's newsletter recently from Sunday, but like he said he wanted to focus more on like the solo books. Like, here we have Phoenix and Storm's going to be getting a book too, and like they want a new X-Men book like each month after July. I'm like, dear God, you can't do that many.
He's here like, just watch me.
Yeah.
And he didn't, you know, he talked about like how, because of how the publishing model works, they have to publish a certain amount of books every month in order to be profitable. So if they're going to use what they need to do from a business standpoint, but also like as strategy for creativity, I'm here for it. Give us a new X book every month. This is so much better.
This is so much better than focusing more on nostalgia books than like give me books that like are actually mean something instead of releasing a bunch of mini series that are set in the before times.
I mean, listen, we love Anne Nesenti quite a bit, but like, who was reading that Storm book? I don't know anyone who read that Storm book and was like, it was great.
Well,
I mean,
I don't,
not that the writing was bad, but I mean, like, no one was reading it. So I'm trying to say,
who the hell was reading like Joe Fixit and stuff like that? Nothing against like Peter David. I mean, he's done his best stuff. I mean, all those writers are great writers, but their best stuff came up in the 80s and 90s. It's 2024.
I say this all the time. Writing evolves. Sometimes you need to pave the way for new writers and new creatives and respect what you can't got before. Mm-hmm. But okay. So wait. Jed McKay, Ryan Stegman, X-Men number one. Team consists of Cyclops, Magic, Psylocke, Temper, who's Oya, who was one of the original Five Lights, Juggernaut, and Kid Omega. And Magic. Did I say Magic already?
I don't know, but here you go.
I love it. This probably is the book I'm most excited for.
Well, yeah, it's Jed McKay. But like I'm excited. I love all the costume designs. Cyclops design is actually really great. I love it. It's great to see Ryan Stegman on it. You can kind of tell they are bringing it. I mean, because Ryan Stegman has like that 90s sort of style, which is why like him and Donny Cates' Venom and was such super popular, because it was like that big bombastic 90s sort of style and that sort of sketchy hardcore vibes you get from the 90s extreme. But I'm excited. The team, I like the team. I really do. It's going to be nice to see Cyclops really lead the X-Men, because I feel like we never really got that in the Krakoa era at all.
No.
But I love this team. I love it. I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it's all a really great dynamic. And, you know, I think Cyclops works best when Jean's dead. And I think Jean works best when she is a goddess, you know, in charge of the universe. So I'm happy to see these two characters separate.
There you go.
I want him to get back together with Emma. I want Cyclops with Emma. I think I stand that couple so much.
I prefer them. I prefer them too than Jean and Cyclops.
I just think like Emma has so much swag, but she has like, it's misconstructed that because she's a bitch, she just hates everyone, and she doesn't. Mm-hmm. She actually has a beautiful, open heart.
So, I think they balance each other out pretty well because they're kind of opposites.
Yeah.
Where like Jean and Cyclops kind of seem like they're supposed to be like that perfect couple. Like you got the pretty redhead and you have the Boy Scout that's always trying to do good. But I feel like kind of having the sort of like bitchy, she's not bitchy and actually be pretty wholesome, but kind of having those two together, like, and it works well. And I hope that they'd be great if they brought them back together.
So speaking of Emma, she's going to be headlining Exceptional X-Men by Eve mm-hmm. Ewing and Carmen Carnero.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be Emma on a, I don't know what device, what is this thing that she is like standing on that like hovers, but her and Shadowcat mm-hmm. are going to be leading a group of new mutants. So I guess like kind of like their Generation X title.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Having Eve L. Ewing kind of headline that title is, great for her. I mean, her books are okay. I'm not the biggest fan, but she has written some solid titles, like with Monica Rambeau. Her Black Panther is decent. But Carmen Carnero, her stuff is great.
I love her. She's one of the, what are they called? Stormbreakers?
Yeah.
I don't understand what group this, how you become a Stormbreaker, but I love all her work.
Yeah, the Stormbreaker thing doesn't make sense. They have new artists, but then they have artists from books that have been drawing since like the 90s. It's confusing. Anyways, Carmen is great. She's done a lot of wonderful stuff with the Captain America series that Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly did. Fantastic work. She did some recent grid stuff recently with Amazing Spider-Man that looked great. I'm so happy that she's on this book. This is going to be a beautiful
X-Men Red
book.
Too. She was in X-Men
That's
Red.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, she did.
She was so we tried to get her on Power of X-Men, and she was really sweet. She wrote back being like, oh, I don't really speak English. I was like, well, that never stopped us before on Masters of Books.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
But B, I was like, it's okay. Yo hablo español. Like, we can do the interview in Spanish. I mean, in my broken-ass Spanish. But she's so great. I loved her. I've wanted her on the podcast because I love her art so much. My only note is that I don't want Kitty and Emma to regress. I love the progress they have made on Krakoa.
Yeah, me too.
As like in so many ways, like Kitty is going to be a successor to Emma. That's sort of how I see her, as like a protege to Emma one day, you know, sort of being that kind of Emma void when Emma's no longer around. So I don't want them to go back to being antagonistic like mm-hmm. they were during Astonishing X-Men. Like I hope we've been able to move past that. And they'll be, you know, co-partners in this.
Yeah, I hope so too.
I have no feelings on the new mutants that have been introduced here. And they look interesting. Let's see where it goes. Let's see where it goes. And then our final book that we'll talk about is Uncanny X-Men by Gail Simone and David Marquez.
I think that's another match made in heaven. Gail Simone, I mean, in my eyes, can do no wrong when it comes to comic books. I love everything she's done. Birds of Prey, Wonder Woman, Secret Six. It all good stuff. I think she's a really great writer. She did Red Sonja, did some great stuff there. And like David Marquez, I think, is a very iconic artist as well. I mean, he did a lot of great Spider-Man stuff with Bendis. And I'm excited to see where this goes. The team is probably the most, has all the popular X-Men on it. Gambit, Jubilee, Nightcrawler, Rogue, Wolverine.
You're like, just buy this book, please. Yes.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, everybody in X-Men 97.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. They're like, please, here's a 90s comic book writer. Here are 90s X-Men characters. Buy it right now.
But I think it's supposed to be like, this is supposed to be like a Rogue focus book, though.
I love a Rogue focus book. When Mike Carey did it, I thought he wrote the best Rogue we have ever gotten.
I love that run so much. X-Men, I love that run of X-Men. So good. So good, man.
And so underrated. I can't believe, like, at the time, everyone loved it. But the second Reed's, Carey left,
like, yeah, I know. Like, read some of the early Hickman stuff with Krakoa. Like, so many influences from Carey stuff.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I mean, Children of the Vault, right there.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. If we're going to have a book with Nightcrawler, Rogue, and Gambit, I want to see family dynamics play out here. I mean, lean into that like familial drama of,
Yeah.
you know, I mean, Gambit does not get along with Destiny. Rogue loves Destiny. And Nightcrawler's like, oh, I just found out Destiny is my mom. Lean into that, those complicated
Yeah.
nuances while saving the world.
Yeah, I hope they don't like with this relaunch. I hope it's not like they just forget about like the like any of like the important aspects of Krakoa era. You know what I mean? Like a lot of that character development, like you mentioned earlier with Kate and Emma Frost, you know? Like you can't ignore a progression, you know?
No, but I'm sure they can. But I hope they don't. I hope they don't.
Or at least keep some sort of aspects from it. Like the X-Men Origins Blue or whatever the hell that title was called. Like that was a pretty big milestone for Destiny, Mystique, and Nightcrawler.
And again, like I didn't necessarily, I like the idea. I like the idea, but I don't think it was well executed. But just because it wasn't well received by some, I hope it's not forgotten. I hope that's it. It's canon. Expand on it. Make flesh out that story as best as you can.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, the one thing that I was gonna note here is that for Uncanny, we see Jubilee looking at the Xavier School being closed. And I'm like, is this supposed to mean something? They haven't been in the school
Yeah,
in 2019. Like,
it's been closed.
it's been closed. Why are they re closing it again? I actually thought they were opening it up. And Jubilee was like, no, I'm not gonna do this. But no, they're reclosing the closed school. It doesn't make any sense. So
Hey, it's close. There, it's just
we
a
get
reminder.
it.
It's still closed.
We get it. We get it. Like, that's it. So let's see how all that shakes out. I mean, it's easy to be judgmental without knowing the story. But yeah. So again, like on the whole, I'm not excited for the reboot. But when I look at it on this individual level of every title and the creatives, I'm with you. I have nothing to be upset about. Like I have
Yeah.
an open heart. I have an open heart.
Yeah, I do too. I think it might not be something entirely new. I mean, but I think it's something that's going to be fun.
Okay, well, before we end today's episode, let's talk about the new issue that came out today, X-Men Forever, number two.
Yep.
I'm not following things as closely as I should. I just want to preface that. So I'm reading along, I'm reading Fall and Rise, but I read this issue, and it's not that I felt lost. But I was just like, why are we still dwelling on these points? Like, I don't like that they're in the White Hot Room. The White Hot Room is supposed to be a higher, elevated state of being. And yet it just looks exactly like Krakoa. And they're able to resurrect all these mutants in there that Orcus killed. And somehow killing Jean in the White Hot Room, a death plus a death. Two negatives equals a positive, and she's alive. Can you explain it to me? Do you understand?
Well, no.
Well,
I mean, I like the negative equals a positive. I think that's kind of funny. But
Gillen is a great writer.
I
That's
don't
why.
get the I just don't know what the end game is because like do they want to save Krakoa? Like it doesn't feel like nobody wants this.
I don't get
And
it.
it's fun reading it at the moment. In my opinion, I'm having somewhat fun of it, but like the thing is, I don't know what the end game is.
I just don't understand. Like, what? Like, come on. Like, we're already almost at the end of the series, and none of us care.
And I think that's the point. I think that's what Marvel wants us. They're like, lose interest in this as much as possible. Like, make it confusing, make them write them out of character, do all of that. So the next relaunch is. Gets a lot of money.
I just want to listen. I'm not going to disagree with you on that. Like, this is a story about Jean in the White Hot Room and her, you know, returning. I should be all over this, and yet I find it so drab and difficult to read. And again, I think Gillen is a great writer. This is not a criticism on quality of writing, but this is a criticism on the game that is being played here. And it just doesn't make any sense to me, man. I
That's
want
what
to.
sucks with Fall of X, though, is everything spanned over so many different titles. And so it's hard to comprehend all of it at the time. It might read better, like being digested all at once, but it's a lot. And that's why it's this right here is like the ending to Krakoa does not feel like the beginning when it started with Hickman. I think what made those special is that you legit, you relaunched the X-Men with two titles, House of X and Powers of Ten, that read well together.
They did.
And then with here, you have Rise of Power 10. You have Fall of the House of 10, of whatever. You have Rise and Fall. You have Dead X-Men that didn't work too well as it should have. You had you have a Cable book for some weird ass reason. You have,
that's right, we did have a Cable book.
It's still going.
Problem, if I don't even know this off the top of my head, like I eat and breathe X-Men. And I don't even know this. This is something that, like, again, it's just one would assume they what exactly what you just said. They want to kill the line so bad that now we're going to be excited for what we have coming next.
That's what it feels like. They're wanting to, like, it's so weird. Like, they rose so high, yet they're falling so hard.
Like Icarus. I don't know. I just, like, there was so much promise with the Krakoan age. And it's so sad. I don't think any of us, when we all jumped on in 2019, August, was it August or September? 2019.
Yeah, around the fall, yeah. Because that's when I started reading.
I know. It brought you and so many new readers of just X-Men into the fold. And now for us to be here, I would not recommend any of these books to anyone. When people are like, oh, what should I read? I'm like, just read the House of X and Powers of Ten. You know what I mean?
And then
like,
don't right do now. Anything after that.
And then just forget about it.
Forget everything else. Like, actually, I wouldn't recommend that. It's almost like, look what we almost achieved.
I thought there were some warning flags with Krakoa early on, like Fallen Angels and even, you know, Excalibur, like the way Tini Howard wrote that first issue. I was like, this doesn't really make sense. But I kept an open heart because I didn't want to be that person starting off a new podcast and complaining into the internet. But I really do hope that, like, Bree Board is able to come in and, like, fix things and get things back in order. By the way, he also talked about this in his newsletter, the new X-Men, right? Remember they were going to do, like, a relaunch in November. Jordan D. White had, like, new X-Men, and it went nowhere. It was an announcement that came. Yeah. Never got any follow-up, and Bree Board mentioned it on one of his letters where he was like, oh, this was an idea that Jordan D. White had. And had
nothing happened to it.
Like, what? Like, you could just tell that they pivot. And, like, I just think
it's so crazy. Like, they legit, like, when was that? Was that like last summer when they said something.
San Diego. It was at San
Yeah, and nothing ever came off of it. And it's almost like, what the hell happened within those couple days?
And
because
no
I'm at
no one
well because imagine it like I like it was announced and then I bet like a couple days after that they Brevoort was asked to take over the X-Men.
Yeah,
I wonder what happened. Were they like, oh, maybe we shouldn't do this?
I really like, I, you know, when we have some people on the on the podcast, I want to ask questions, not because I want tea or you know, gossip. I'm genuinely curious. Why would you announce at San Diego Comic-Con a new team and then not follow up with it in any way, shape, or form? You know what I mean?
Yeah, especially I have no idea.
You could have just reskinned Dead X-Men as New X-Men. You know what I mean? And none the wiser. No one would know otherwise. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, why do all that back, all that need for promotion and then nothing?
Yeah, it's weird. But I think, I don't know what's going to come with Brevoort being part of the head office, but I think bringing Brevoort in is going to give X-Men something that they haven't had in a while. And I think that's some sort of control, some sort of cohesiveness to their books, because I feel like with this end of X-Men, it's just a mess.
Yeah.
And I think with Brevoort having the experience he has with just his history of with Avengers books and event books, I think bringing him in is going to bring some sort of cohesion and some sort of, I don't know, it's not going to look as sloppy, I feel like.
I agree with you. Listen, I'm 100% on the same page as you. I think he's going to come in
he has good editorial experience at the very least. Mm-hmm. And we can get something like that. You know, this issue, X-Men Forever, I was talking about it with Flink. I was like, hey, X-Men Forever, there's a lot of Jean stuff happening here. And he's here like, oh, I didn't even know that that book existed. And again, that is a problem when someone who's been collecting X-Men comics since the 80s works, you know, in the industry, doesn't even know this book exists. But, you know, I just, this issue ends with Hope being like, what's the one way, what's the only fire that can kill Jean? Her own fire. And then lights her on fire, and then Jean is reborn, and she says she feels more powerful than ever, but the Phoenix is scared. And Hope is like, uh-huh, and like, you know, gets her gun going. And there's like a Phoenix plan coming, and I'm like, okay, I'm a huge Phoenix fan. I want to see the Phoenix mythology sort of streamlined, but like, this is not interesting to me. I need something
else. If it was happening elsewhere, I think it would be better.
Yeah.
Were it taking place to be like the end of Krakoa, it just does not work, I think.
Let's see where everything goes. I mean, this issue in particular was very middle of the road. It's, again, set up. And I'm looking forward to, again, not a criticism on the quality of the writing team or the artist, but yeah, I just don't care.
No, I'm burnt out and I just wanted to end, which I think is Marvel's intention.
Yes, I listen, next issue, Jean as a Phoenix just says reborn and everything goes to white. That's it. One page and we are done. That's it. I don't need anything else. You can abandon everything else. So,
I mean, that's practically what Marvel is doing. They're just making it seem like it's important.
Tell the folks at home where to find you, Cole L. Cole L.
I live at home.
Go knocking on his door.
You could find me on Instagram at Masters of Comic Books, where I do reviews, top five books of the week. I show off new releases each week. Kind of just vibing.
Yeah, no, you're a great page, man. I remember when we first started, I was like, meh, I don't know what a general comic book page can do. And you were like, hold my beer, not that you drink. Hold my soda.
Oh, I'll get this. I got this.
You got this. And I love what you post. I love your reviews. You get such great interaction with your reviews. You're always spot on. You always have your ear to the ground with stuff. So, folks.
Well, my life is library and comic books. I don't do much else.
And it shows. No, it's so good. I love all the content you post always.
Thank you. That means a lot. Thank you.
All right, Familia, hit us up at Power of X-Men on Instagram, which is the only social media platform we use. We have an interview with Wolverine Origins star Lynn Collins that we will be dropping next week, as well as some interviews that are up on the horizon. And once we have those in the can, we will announce them. But
awesome. Yeah. Oh, you get more of me soon in the future.
Yes, you're always welcome, man.